Okay, I believe it's 3 o'clock. Do any of you know of other people who you know are coming who aren't here yet? Besides Dave? Okay, hearing none, let's go ahead and start. My name's Neil Clopton, and I'm gonna be talking about music software, sort of. I am going to be talking about things that a musician might want to do with a computer. So I'm going to do a little bit less of the product name dropping that sometimes goes on in talks like this. And I'm going to try and focus on things people want to do. And I'm going to provide examples of some specific music-related problems that I've solved using computers. And I'm going to talk about other things that I know about but haven't necessarily done myself. Why do I think I'm qualified to talk about such things? I'm a guitarist. I've been playing guitar since I was a teenager. I'm also an electronic musician. So when people think of computer music and you think of electronic dance music or weird experimental electronic stuff, I do that too. But today I'm mostly going to be talking about things that apply to either a huge range of musicians or specifically aren't obvious computer music applications. And professionally, I'm also a system administrator. So between being a system administrator and an electronic musician, I spend a tremendous amount of time with computers. And I'm sure you're familiar with the saying, familiarity breeds contempt. I have a very unromantic attitude towards technology. It doesn't hold a lot of mystery for me. Not that I understand everything, but even the stuff I don't understand doesn't mystify me because I know it's not magic. But, you know, the basic idea is that computers aren't interesting in and of themselves. You are interesting. And the things you might want to do with a computer, interesting. Computers in and of themselves, not interesting until they become useful to you. So when I'm talking to younger musicians about buying equipment, I give this same piece of advice that I'm giving you in thinking about software or computer hardware or whatever. Don't ask what you want, ask what you want to do. It's not about the stuff, it's about what you want to do. What you want to do. Okay, first specific problem that I solved with the help of a computer involves lead sheets. So how many people know in general what I mean when I say lead sheet? Okay. Cover bands use them, jazz combos use them. They take a couple of different forms, but the idea is that you put information about a composition on a piece of paper, and you don't have all the details of the composition, you just have enough information to be able to play it. And there are different combinations of information that are included on lead sheets in different situations. And I had, okay, here's an example of a jazz lead sheet that has a bunch of melody information and chords, but no lyrics. Now, if you Google or some other web search, the name of a song and the word chords, you will get a bunch of websites that are probably violating copyright law, but have words and chords. So this is an Indigo Girls song, and it doesn't spell out the melody, but it's got the chords and the lyrics. So if I'm in a cover band and we play Bruce Springsteen and Indigo Girls and Matchbox 20, I can spend a little time with a search engine and dig up roughly this level of detail of information about most of the songs we're likely to need to play. And this is the form of lead sheet that I've used most over time. Here's the same thing in a slightly different form, but the chords are stuck in the lines with the lyrics, a little more space efficient, might allow you to get more than one song on a single sheet of paper. So a number of years ago, I changed churches. I switched from attending a church in the town where I work to attending a church in the town where I live. And I had played guitar for the church in the town where I work. And we used lead sheets that looked like this, had that kind of information on them. And so my new church, they lose their guitarist. I make myself available. The music director says, sure, come on to practice. And I get to practice, and I'm the only person there who can't read modern standard notation. I'm the only person there who can't read bar and staff sheet music. Okay, I come from a folk music and rock and roll background where lots of people can't read music, and it had never been a problem before. And so I got there, and their lead sheets looked more like that jazz chart that I had up before, except some of them didn't have guitar chords at all. And better yet, the ones that did have guitar chords, they played in different keys. And not only am I the only person who can't read music, I'm the only person there, believe it or not, who couldn't transpose in their head while playing. So it's like, okay, spot the rock musician, you know? So you may have heard this joke, how do you stop a rock band from playing? Hand them printed music. Right. Well, that was me. And so I'm used to having this. This is a song that we played at both churches. And I'm used to having that. They're used to this. Except sometimes it didn't have chords, and when they were there, they were for the wrong key. And so what I started doing, I worked this out with the music director. A day or two before practice, she would email me the song titles and the key we were going to play in. I would do a web search for the song. I would find something that looked like that. And then I would paste it in to something like this. There are a number of websites out there that have these web tools on them that if you paste the text from a lead sheet into them, they will transpose it for you. This isn't the one I used. This one looks much better on the slide, which is why I included it here. But here you can tell it what the old key is. A lot of them will also guess the old key with surprising accuracy. And there you select the key you're transposing it into. And the output, well, that's what it looks like when you paste the text in. And that's what the output looks like. Creepily similar to what I showed you a moment ago. It basically exactly what I needed. So this allowed me to feel slightly less incompetent when I showed up for practice. Now, one of the things that I think is interesting about this particular solution, and I think this is important when we think about what we're going to recommend to other people or, you know, solving problems in general, is I could have done this without owning a computer. I didn't actually spend that much time with the computer. And there are communities within the United States where lots of people can't afford computers or don't have them for some other reason. And there's lots of places in the rest of the world where individuals are unlikely to own a computer. And if they do, it's going to be relatively old. I could have done this at the library a couple blocks from my house. I could have gone over to the home of an acquaintance and borrowed their computer for 30 minutes and done this. So this is a solution that is not limited to middle class and above people in Western societies. This solution, because it only requires brief access to the computer, is available to a whole lot of people. And there's no fancy software involved. The most complicated things involved are web browser and maybe a word processor so I could make the chord letters bold. There's the song in G. I thought I had it, well, G, A, yeah. Okay. Now here's another thing that on the surface doesn't sound like it would be hugely useful to a wide variety of people, but once you understand it, you realize that there are maybe a few more applications of it. For many decades, at least back to the 70s, DJs have been syncing the tempos of records with each other. The first people to be famous for it were from New York, where hip hop developed. But now it's commonplace for people with a much lower level of DJ skills to sync recordings up on a computer. And one way to do it is with a dedicated DJ app like Mix, which is what I'm showing here, M-I-X-X-X. And if you want to do a DJ mix, this is the software you want. However, you might also be interested in using it if you're helping somebody make a class reunion video or a family reunion video or a wedding video. And you've got multiple pieces of music that you want to use, and you don't want to draw attention to the transition from one piece of music to the next. This will allow you to eliminate one of the things that makes the human ear go, oh, the music's changing, which is that the tempo is different.
Is that open source?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It's bundled with a lot of different distributions, and if you go to the developer's website, the downloadable version installs pretty smoothly too, if you want something slightly newer than what was packaged with your distribution. It's fairly easy to get, and to my knowledge, it's entirely free and open. So for any of you who might happen to recognize the artist names here, this is actually two jazz tracks that I synced up. And the way this works is that the software detects the tempo of each song. And I chose two that were pretty close together, 123 beats per minute, 128 and a third beats per minute. And if I wanted to use these in background of something, wanted to use both of them, wanted to make them flow one into the other more smoothly than you can do with just a straight crossfade, I can let Mix detect the tempos, and then I can tell one of them to assume the tempo of the other one. So there's a button up there labeled Sync, and you click that, and the song that the Sync button belongs to assumes the tempo of the other song. And then you've got these beat markers in here, and this is jazz, so you don't have the huge triangular shaped beats in the waveform. It's a lot more subtle, but Mix still detects them. You get those lined up, and in this case, the songs are in different keys, so they don't really sound like they belong together, but they flow together much better than if I hadn't synced the tempos. So something you could, it's just an example of another thing you can do that you might not think of, or you might think, oh, this is DJ software, it isn't for me. Well, yeah, it's DJ software, but if it solves a problem for you, it is for you.
Does the song being transitioned to, does it eventually regain its original tempo?
You can choose to allow it to. By default, it will keep playing at the tempo you've changed it to until you tell it to do something else. But you can sync things up and then drop them back down or back up to their original tempo.
Does that shift not grab a key?
Again, that's an option. By default, it does not. And that's one of the things that's special about digital audio is that you can change pitch and tempo independent of one another. You can, in a lot of DJ software, tell it to behave like a vinyl record and have the pitch move with the tempo. But it's optional. It doesn't do that. It doesn't do that by default.
Another application for that tempo matching is if you're doing sound effects, which I happen to be working with a little bit right now, if you're doing sound effects of something mechanical, like you need a Foley for a machine that's got gear work or something like that, and you need to merge from one sound effect into another, the sound, sounds can also have tempo that's not musical sounds.
Right, and can you tell everybody what you mean by Foley? I know what that means, but I don't know if everybody else does.
When they make a movie, that's like the footsteps on gravel, or they'll have shoes that are on handles and kind of crunch through the gravel and stuff. So it's basically making sound effects. I'm not actually doing Foleys. My stuff is all synthetic, but you still run into the same kind of problem.
Yep.
You've got this big, a big barn door that's supposed to go rumble, 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 closed, and then there's supposed to be some echoing sound that sounds off of it. So sometimes you need to sync those to make the transitions.
And the real world has a lot of rhythm in it.
Yeah.
The physical world, a lot of stuff has beats. So that's an interesting example of something that doesn't initially register as music in your head, but has interesting musical qualities that tools like this could help you with.
Can you adjust the tempo and the tuning on a single track by itself? Does that work, or is that do you use a different?
Audacity can do that.
That's true. Yeah.
Which is actually, I'm glad you just talked about the other tool, because I'm doing that in Audacity now, and the tool you just presented would be an easier way for me to do that particular task.
In particular, that's useful for learning to play by ear.
Mm-hmm. When you say individual track, you mean like you've got a recording with multiple instruments in it, and you want to move one of them?
Or just like off the CD, and it's way too fast for me, and if I want to learn it by ear, it has to slow down a lot.
Oh yeah, mix would be a great way to do that. And the technology of changing the tempo of something without changing the pitch is called time stretching, in different pieces of software do it different ways. The way mix does it sounds very natural. If you were doing this, what you were describing, it would still sound pretty natural. Some other programs it might not. So this would actually be a really good solution for that. One of the things that people think of when they think of computer music, electronic music, they think of electronic drums, synthetic drums. And a lot of drummers and a lot of other musicians, don't really like electronic drums. But they're, even if you don't like them, and you don't want them to be in your finished piece of music, they may be helpful along the way if you're a songwriter. And most songwriters write on guitar or piano or some other type of keyboard. But in some cases, it can be helpful to create a simple drum pattern in a drum machine and use that as part of your compositional process. And why would you want to do that? Well, you can do it to enforce tempo changes on yourself. So you're playing something, you can't get the groove of it playing at a different speed. Set the drums to the desired speed, and that'll help you get there, and you can figure out if that's where you want to take the composition. You can use it to enforce swing. And I'm not going to try and explain what swing is. You can find a jazz musician, and they'll nail it down for you. And various other changes of feel or simulating the situation of playing with other musicians. So if any real drummers in the room are going to laugh at this, but here I just used four different parts in the drum machine. This drum machine's called Hydrogen. It's free and open. And it's fairly simple, but I did put stuff in that wasn't exactly on the beat and wasn't exactly off the beat. So if I were writing with this, that would be very different than just using a metronome to try and work at different tempos. It throws a lot more into the mix and could help push you in a different direction. Of course, it's really easy with a drum machine like this to add and remove stuff and change stuff on the fly for whatever experimental purposes you're trying to accomplish. Now, another thing that computers in general are really useful for is solving organizational problems. For example, anyone who has moved from using a paper calendar to an electronic calendar knows that the electronic calendar can follow them around. It's easier to make changes in it. You don't have to find the old appointment, erase it, find where it's supposed to move to, and pencil it back in and hope you got the details right. In most cases with an electronic calendar, you click on the appointment and drag it to the new position and you're done. And the same sort of principles apply to all sorts of other organizational things that musicians might need to do. This is a diagram I created of a seven-part rondo. So A, B, A, C, A, B, A, which is a traditional musical form. And I created these items that represent arrangement decisions. So groups of instruments that I want to include or emphasize in the different sections of the rondo. So I want strings to be prominent in all of the A sections. I want the vocal trio to be prominent in the B sections and the C section. And if you're a really visual person, which a lot of musicians are, you know, just notice all the musicians that also paint, all the musicians that also work with video. Very common for musicians to also be very visual. This diagramming tool is intended for programmers. But it works great for this. It happened to be the diagramming program I had access to, so it's the one I used for the example. And I'm not that visual. I'm verbal. I love outlines. I need outlines. I take notes in a meeting. It's an outline. Writing, whatever, shopping lists, everything for me is an outline because it allows me to use words to structure everything, which I'm really verbal and I need that. So here's another example of solving a musical problem without using anything that was designed for music. I had an opportunity to perform some of my electronic music at the Des Moines Social Club in Des Moines, Iowa. And if you know any electronic musicians, you probably know that presenting electronic music live can be really difficult. And I was committed to not going in there and just DJing my finished recordings, which I probably could have gotten away with. I wanted to do an actual live performance. So I collected a bunch of the sounds that I had used in the compositions that I'd finished in the previous year or so, and divided them up, and assigned those sounds to keys on a MIDI controller and a bunch of effects parameters to knobs on other MIDI controllers. And I created this outline to guide me through what I was going to do with all those different sounds and effects over the course of a 1 hour set. So, News is the name of an audio clip. Oil and Bang and 4S are names of audio clips. And this goes on for 3 pages, and this is what I used to practice, and while I was practicing, I found stuff that didn't work, made changes to it. Another advantage of digital technology, it's very easy to make changes to things on the fly. And that's also what I used to guide me through the final performance. Fairly low-tech solution. Again, this is something that could be done on a very old computer that wasn't capable of running modern audio software. And I mentioned before that I can't read standard notation, but I think a lot of musicians who do would benefit from using modern notation software, which basically allows you to treat a musical composition like a word processor document. Because I don't have a ton of personal experience with these, I am going to fall back on name dropping here. But two of the respected apps are Rose Garden and MuseScore. And both of them, I am told, are fairly easy to use, and the output looks like correct, engraved, printed music. Here's an example of a Rose Garden window. On your computer, you might see more of the stabs and bars because this happens to be a really low resolution screenshot. Yes, it, to my knowledge, does not run on Linux, but it's the same type of software. Finale is in sort of the same family of notation apps as Rose Garden and MuseScore, so that's exactly what we're talking about. Yeah, a lot of notation programs also give you the option of doing input from a musical keyboard. What was the name of the one you use again?
Denimo.
Denimo?
It's open source. It's the GNU music editor.
Okay.
It's in Fedora. I would assume it's another distribution.
Okay, I wasn't familiar with that name. Thank you. Okay, one more example of something I did myself. Back in the 80s and early 90s, the way a lot of home recordings were made was with Tascam or Fostex 4-track cassette decks. And you could put one instrument on each of the 4 tracks. One of the great things about affordable computers and modern music software is that if you can get the sound into the computer, you can probably have all the tracks you want. In theory, you could run out of computer resources for the tracks, but it's unlikely. And that means that you don't have to be as careful with those resources. So if you want to burn five tracks recording a single piano performance, you can do that. And so why would you want to? Well, mic placement, anyone who's familiar with recording technology knows that infinitesimal movements of a microphone can have huge impacts on the sound of the recording. It's just like if you walk around someone playing an instrument, wherever you stand, it sounds slightly different. Because your ears are moving, your ears have a different spatial relationship to the sound source. Same thing with microphones. Plus, different types of microphones have radically different sounds. So if you can give yourself all that extra information to work with, those extra tracks in the recording, you can pick and choose which ones you want to use, you can blend them, you can put one of them slightly out of sync with the other one if you want to. So this picture was taken with this telephone. In my house, and that's a guitar amp, that's a microphone, that's a microphone. And I have a sound card in my computer that allows me to record from multiple sources at once. These are not as expensive as they used to be. And so I set this up and I made a recording. And this was something I'd been looking forward to doing, but I didn't have enough mic stands and I didn't have enough mic cords. And so when I finally got that stuff and set it up, I was excited about it. So I took a picture of it and I posted it online and made some self-effacing joke about too bad having more microphones doesn't make me play better. And a couple of my musician friends chuckled. And then, imagine my surprise, when about 6 weeks ago, I pick up the August edition of Sound on Sound, and here's a photograph of someone doing precisely the same thing and a feature article explaining why you might want to do it. Microphone, 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 microphone. And I thought, okay, I am right to include this in my presentation. So one of the top pro audio magazines in the world, my place. One of the top pro audio magazines in the world, my place. So I did this, I made the recording, and this is the project window of the Ardor session that I used those recordings in. That is part of them. And if I was brave enough to actually do a demo as part of this, I could play each of these recordings for you and you would hear the difference. The dynamics are slightly different. The tonal colors are slightly different. It would be really obvious to you that this is the same, that these are different recordings of the same performance. And even if you're doing a relatively simple demo of your own music to play for other musicians or for whatever purpose, this is fairly easy to do and it doesn't take a lot of, it's not much more work than just putting one microphone on the instrument. It's just a little bit more work and you have a lot more to work with. And zooming in on the waveforms, you can see that this is the same performance because I did a palm mute right there, which knocks out all the high frequencies and slams the volume of the guitar way down momentarily. And you can see that when the sound recovers from me muting the strings, it's represented slightly differently in each recording. And if I, and like I said, if I was brave enough to do a demo, I would play that for you, and you would hear that there's, you know, not only a tonal difference, but a dynamic difference. So I know that my title said 10 things, but that's actually all the examples I have for you. I am going to post my slides on the speaker bar site for the conference. They will also show up on my blog, oldmixtapes.blogspot.com. And if you follow me on Google Plus, I'll probably link to them there too. This is just a laundry list of websites that you might want to check out if you're interested in this kind of stuff. It's there if you want it. And we have a little bit of time for questions.
With regards to multi-track recording, have you ever dealt with trying to record simultaneously more channels than a single sound card has? So for example, if you've got multiple sound cards, whether PCI sound cards, USB sound cards, whatever, and you've got, you know, a couple of stereo channels, a couple of mono channels, whatever. Have you messed around with that at all before?
You can combine audio interfaces using jack, which jack is the high performance recording and music related audio server for Linux. It handles all your drivers for you and gets the drivers to talk to the different applications you're using. But you can aggregate audio interfaces together in jack. So if you have three stereo sound cards, you can, in theory, combine them together into a larger virtual sound card in jack. That said, if there's any way you can afford an individual sound card that has the number of inputs you need, it will probably be a big time saver, because I understand that while the stuff in jack works, it's not necessarily easy to set up.
Well, it was kind of going to lead to my actual question, which was, have you had any experience dealing with like sampling clock drift between multiple hardware cards? Like, if, you know, are you familiar with the issue that I'm talking about?
Yeah, I am, and I think that's another good reason to save money for an individual sound card that does what you need it to do. There are ways to force digital audio devices to all obey the same clock. I don't have any personal experience with it. And there are a couple of really good mailing lists that cover problems like this. If you go to linuxaudio.org list info, there's the information for subscribing to Linux Audio mailing lists, and there are people on there with much deeper technical knowledge of those problems than I have.
So a good example of that is
Their Ardor and LMMS, and I think some of the other DAWs do have support for Windows VST instruments and effects. Other people have, I've read multiple articles about people using Wine to take advantage of their Windows software. My personal experience with that has not been good. I've found my time better spent learning my way around the Linux resources. However, other people have demonstrated that it can work very well if you configure it right. And there's a number of articles out there that show how to do it. I'm using an M-Audio 1010 LT. It's a PCI card, so if for some reason you have a machine that only has PCIe slots, you wouldn't be able to use it. But there are really good free drivers for it. I'm using AV Linux. I know other people have gotten really good results with Ubuntu Studio. I haven't used it myself, but it's respected.
One quick comment and one question. The quick comment sort of feeds into the previous question about hardware. Mackie Traction is now in beta for Linux.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Ah, ALSA. There it is.
ALSA?
Yeah. ALSA project is the free software project that does drivers for sound cards for Linux. And there are many... The ALSA project website is kind of amazing. The number of devices that really do work correctly, and they're all supported by the same family of drivers, and therefore they all work with Jack and they all work with all this other stuff. If you can find your device on that list, which in all likelihood you will, it's just gonna work. FireWire devices, the odds are not quite as good, but a lot of USB devices work correctly. And a lot of PCI devices work correctly.
Tell us some about your electronic tools. I mean, is there a software sampler that you like, or what would be recommendations in that space?
I use Ardor a lot. I do a tremendous amount of editing in Ardor. A lot of my sounds are created by chopping sounds down to the level of what are called grains. If you've heard people talk about granular synthesis, it's sort of the same process, or microsonic composition. It's where the definition of microsound or microsonic or of a grain is any sound shorter than a note. So you take a bunch of sounds shorter than a note and combine them together and you have a new sound. I do a lot of that in Ardor. Hydrogen is my go-to drum machine, in spite of the fact that I can't figure out how to get it to do odd time signatures. And I'm hoping that someday it will support odd time signatures. But those are apps that I spend a tremendous amount of time in.
You have some of your music on the mix types?
Yeah. Yep. There, some of the posts have links to stuff. Some of them have actual players in them. So. Yeah. It depends on what you're doing. If you are overdubbing live recordings over, if you're recording live over a recording, if you're using a combination of software instruments and hardware MIDI instruments, then you know some of those types of things, real time makes a big difference. A lot of my time is just spent editing, and then latency is not that big of a deal, and it doesn't affect me that much. I worked with real time turned off for a long time at one point, and it didn't make any difference to me. But had I been doing overdubbing recording, I would have wanted it to be working.
Does Ardor have a quantizer to label for that kind of stuff?
Yes. Yep, it has latency compensation, and you can do other traditional quantizing type stuff also.
Have you played with using the computer for guitar effects or anything like that?
That's another situation where you would want low latency. That's another situation where real time would make a difference. No. I like my stomp boxes for guitar. Well, once I get it into the computer, I apply all kinds of effects to it, but not in real time while I'm playing.
So, on the subject of the lead sheets, what use or role does Tux Guitar play? I keep running across it.
I've never used it. Oh. Sorry.
That's one of those effects software.
Okay. Actually, that was before I quit using Windows for my music, and so I actually did that performance with Ableton Live. There are a couple, but that isn't what I've been doing recently, so I can't remember the names. And I wish I could remember this name too, but a couple of the original developers of Ableton Live left Ableton, and the project that they're working on now runs on Linux, and it's still in beta. What is it?
Bitwig.
And it is like, there are a couple of free projects. There's a thing called Super Looper that is considerably simpler than Ableton Live, but it does some of those things. And there's another one that is more involved than that, that I can't remember the name of. And then hopefully Bitwig is going to turn out to be really cool. And hopefully they make it open.
Can you give us a 30-second overview of your microphone connections? Are they preamp? They plug right into the card, XLR? Or?
My sound card, the 1010LT, has a whole bunch of inputs, but only two of them have mic preamps. So two of the microphones are plugged into those mic preamps, and two of them are plugged into a mixer, and then the output of the mixer is plugged into two of the other inputs. One last question.
Yeah,
I think the first two microphones anybody should buy are an SM58, a Shure SM58 and a Shure SM57. Not because they're great, but because you can submerge them in beer and they still work. And there's also a great video online of Shure employees at Shure headquarters in Indiana dropping an SM58 from the fifth floor, over the fifth floor railing in their entryway. And it bounces on the marble floor and still works. I'm not making this up. What sound card you need depends entirely on how many inputs and outputs you need and how good of analog to digital conversion you're prepared to pay for. My time is up. You've been a great audience. Thank you for all the great questions.